Well, some say genetically modified golden rice can prevent blindness for millions of malnourished people and is therefore a good rice. Others say golden rice is a biotech industry Trojan horse filled with GMOs for invading the farmlands of unwilling nations and is therefore a nefarious rice. These conflicting opinions lead us to ask, is golden rice a good rice or a nefarious rice?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 993rd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Folks, the image of a young blind girl stumbling along a back street of the developing world is the latest weapon in the public relations war over the acceptance of genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. Now, this young girl need not be blind, we are told, if the world were to graciously accept the planting of golden rice. Golden rice is white rice that has been re-engineered to contain the genes of other species that contain beta-carotene, which is a precursor for vitamin A, which is the vitamin that protects our eyes from the harshness of the environment. It is the beta-carotene that gives white rice its golden color and that gives the biotech industry its weapon in the fight for global acceptance. The message the weapon delivers is simple. Feed the hungry golden rice and the hungry will not suffer blindness. Golden rice was developed by, as we understand it, by the Syngenta Corporation, which sells about $15 billion worth of seeds to farmers worldwide every year. Syngenta gave its patent for golden rice to the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines for, and I quote, the benefit of farmers worldwide. Some look at this gift to the world of golden rice and say, wait a minute. Why did a giant corporation that earns its living selling seeds to farmers give away its seeds to farmers? No, this gift is nothing more, they say, than a Trojan horse filled with GMOs for invading the farmlands of unwilling nations. These two ways of seeing the gold in golden rice lead us to ask, is golden rice a good rice? Or is it a nefarious rice? Well, here to help us look for an answer, we have Dr. Patrick Moore, who is with an organization that calls itself Allow Golden Rice Now. Well, Dr. Moore, I think I can figure out which side of the equation you're coming down on.
That's no problem at all, Michael. Yes, I believe that golden rice should have been introduced 10 years ago. Let me just correct one point and
sure,
maybe later a couple of others. Golden rice was invented by two European public servants, one a university professor, the other a molecular biologist in a government lab in Switzerland, a German and a Swiss. And they realized early on in the 90s that lack of beta-carotene in rice was causing all of these problems you talk about, blindness in up to 500,000 children a year. But the other factor is that beta-carotene is essential for our immune system, and UNICEF discovered some 20-odd years ago that, in fact, most of the children who die from vitamin A deficiency is because their immune system is compromised, and that means they will die from diarrhea, malaria, dengue fever, and other diseases that a healthy child would not die from but would recover from after illness. And so they estimate that approximately one quarter of all the child deaths in the world are caused by beta-carotene deficiency or vitamin A deficiency, and that is about 2 million children a year out of the 8 million who die from various diseases and malnutrition.
Well, that's a lot of kids dying. But let me back up for just a minute, because the last time I had Dr. Patrick Moore on the Food Chain Radio program was, gosh, way back in the 100 series, so it's like years and years ago. And it was interesting because we were talking with Dr. Patrick Moore, who is a co-founder of the Greenpeace organization, about the notion of chopping down trees to have sustainable forests, which is kind of like, if you think about it, why would you chop down trees to sustain forests? But kind of makes some sense if you listen to Dr. Patrick Moore. So I have to ask you, Doctor, how did you make the transition from trees to rice?
Well, I've been involved, Michael, in virtually all the environmental issues all my life. For over 40 years, since I got my PhD in ecology here at the University of British Columbia in 1970s, I was an early environmental activist in the 60s. Before the word ecology was even known to the general public, I became aware of it at that nascent period, the height of the Cold War, the height of the Vietnam War, and the emerging consciousness of the environment. And that's all I've done ever since. And I happened to join a small group of people in a church basement here in Vancouver called the Don't Make a Wave Committee, and we became Greenpeace, and I sailed on the first voyage of Greenpeace to the Aleutians to protest U.S. hydrogen bomb testing in November 1971, and amazingly, we succeeded in being a spearhead for that effort. President Nixon canceled the remaining H-bomb tests, and that turned out to be the last hydrogen bomb the United States ever detonated. That was the beginning of Greenpeace. I then spent the next 15 years after I got my PhD, it was while I was doing my PhD in ecology that I joined this little group, I spent the next 15 years full-time in the top committee of Greenpeace, basically helping found Greenpeace International in 1979 as we exploded around the world as an organization. And then I was one of five international directors of Greenpeace until I left in 1986, at which time we had $100 million coming in from being just a church basement committee 15 years earlier. So I was 15 years on the front lines with Greenpeace, but I had to leave because my fellow directors, none of whom had any formal science education as I did, didn't seem to think that mattered, and started adopting positions like ban chlorine worldwide. And since then, many other campaigns that I don't agree with, including the campaign against biotechnology. And so I've spent my whole life on this. And as for the tree point, just so to make it clear, what I say is the reason there's still the same area of forest in North America today as there was 100 years ago, which is a provable fact, is because we use so much wood. Otherwise, no one would plant trees. And so, and the other reason is because agriculture has increased its productivity by about five times since 1900. And that means we only need one-fifth as much forest to be cleared for farmland as we did back then in terms of the amount of yield per hectare or acre. So the intensive agricultural production plus an intensive use of wood for building our homes is what has caused the forest to remain so strong in North America. If you go to the tropical countries where they tend to use bad concrete construction, and that's why 250,000 people died in Haiti from an earthquake that was 200 times less powerful than the one in Japan. That's the reason why there's so many trees in North America.
What you say about that,
so much wood,
it really rings true. The other day I was looking at a photograph of the coastal, we're here in coastal California, and I was looking at a photograph from 1906, an aerial photograph no less, of the countryside. There were no trees on the hills. I was absolutely flabbergasted because now the hills are covered with forests. But in 1906, there were no forests. And I got to thinking, that's pretty strange because we now have a lumber industry that chops trees down. And there you go. So it reminded me of our conversation so many years ago that to save the forest, you have to chop down trees. I just thought it was pretty interesting. So now you're with an organization called Allow Golden Rice. I always ask my guests, Dr. Moore, who pays the way?
We have funded this actually with a very low budget, Michael. We've had lunches where people come and pay $250 each for lunch as a donation. We've had donations from philanthropists in the United States, Phil Harvey being the main one out of Washington, D.C., who is a humanitarian himself, working overseas in family planning. So we've had a really strong level of support from people in Germany where as there is in the U.S. There's quite a lot of money over there and people who want to do something to help all of these children. So we've had no problem in raising the few tens of thousands of dollars that we have managed to lever into a very successful effort. And the reason it's been successful is partly because before we started, and it's only a little over a year old now, we started because we just could not stay in our chairs any longer.
Well, hold on for your chair for just a minute. Now, are you saying you don't get any money from industry for Allow Golden Rice now?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
Industry in Oplanta in Germany, which is a coalition of biotech scientists and the agriculture industry.
Okay, we're out of time. We're going to go to a quick break. Right back with Dr. Patrick Moore and Golden Rice. Is it good rice or is it nefarious rice? Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-6 or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city greenbelts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-6 or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, what do you think? Is that golden rice a promise of cure for blindness for malnourished people around the world? Not only blindness, but all kinds of different diseases. Or is it a Trojan horse to force GMOs into unwilling lands? That's the question we have on the table today. We have Dr. Patrick Moore with us. We also tried to get Janet Cotter, who is a senior scientist for Greenpeace, who is looking at the science of this. But when Greenpeace discovered that we were going to have Dr. Patrick Moore on, they said, no way are we going to talk with that man because he does not have the credentials to discuss this scientifically. And furthermore, he's not a co-founder of Greenpeace. Well, Dr. Patrick Moore has a PhD in environmental sciences, and he spent his 15 years with the original Greenpeace, so I don't quite understand those objections. To me, when I read the objection from Greenpeace, it sounded more like, here is an apostate that we refuse to have anything to do with. Do you consider yourself an apostate to Greenpeace, Dr. Moore?
No, I don't actually. It's really since I left Greenpeace that most of the divisions have occurred in terms of positions on different issues. I saw the writing on the wall when I left. There's only one issue that I agreed with back then that I disagree with now. I'm not going out saying people should start killing whales or setting off atomic bombs or dumping toxic waste into the air and water. I'm totally still on side with all the campaigns I fought back then. Live capture of killer whales or orcas, for example. I led the campaign here in BC to end the capture of live whales for aquariums and zoos. And that was a really important campaign from my perspective. But I was also against nuclear energy when I was with Greenpeace, and I think we made a serious error in confusing nuclear energy and nuclear weapons together. I think today nuclear energy belongs in the same category as nuclear medicine, a beneficial use of nuclear technology, and 100 nuclear plants in the United States providing clean, safe, reliable, and cost-effective energy 24/7, unlike these really expensive renewables, which are not reliable and cost a fortune. So I have a different position on energy and on many aspects than Greenpeace.
And you even talk about chopping down trees to save forests.
Well, the truth is Greenpeace didn't have an anti-forestry campaign when I was there. That happened later.
Oh, okay. And so they actually do have an anti-forestry then? So then,
oh, absolutely, yeah. They, They basically completely mischaracterized the IPCC's statement on forests. The IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change, says the best way to reduce net CO2 emissions with regard to forests is to increase the amount of forest and increase the amount of wood that is being used as a substitute for steel, concrete, and plastic to reduce fossil fuel consumption, and also to pull more carbon out of the atmosphere and store it sequestered in the frames of homes, etc. And Greenpeace says, you know, completely the opposite. They mischaracterized the IPCC's statement in order to give people the impression that forestry is also bad from a climate perspective, when the IPCC itself says it's good from a climate perspective.
So you are in disagreement with Greenpeace on some very substantial issues. But let's go to golden rice, which appears to be the current case where you're really up against it with them. We are told that golden rice will give us the beta carotene to the hungry of the world that they need to cure blindness, essentially, is the claim. Is that true?
Yes, it is absolutely true, and it's been proven in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Professor Tang, who is a Chinese-American who escaped the Cultural Revolution under Mao, has been studying this for many, many years now, has done nutritional feeding trials with golden rice on adults in the U.S. and with children in China, and proved that vitamin A is delivered to the blood by eating golden rice. Now, Greenpeace, on their website in South Asia, where the biggest problem of vitamin A nutrition is, claims that a child would have to eat 9 kilos of rice a day in order to get enough beta carotene. They discredit it as if it will not work, when in fact the real number is 40 grams per day, which is a tiny cupful, gives enough vitamin A to eliminate vitamin A deficiency in children.
So they're
making false claims to say it won't work, and then they say it would be a Trojan horse for GMOs. How could
Just a sec before we go to all of that. Let me go back to the Dr. Kane, is it? K-A-N-E?
Who's that?
The doctor that you just cited, the Chinese doctor that has been studied.
No, Tang. Sorry, it's Professor Tang.
Tang, T-A-N-G?
Yes.
So people can Google that, Tang plus golden rice, and probably come up with a study and look at it then, right?
That's correct. It's in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, 2 studies.
Good. So, did she do this study on people to actually measure the impact of beta carotene, or was it golden rice beta carotene, or how did that work?
Well, she compared the effectiveness of delivering beta carotene and its conversion into vitamin A. She compared spinach, vitamin A pills or capsules, and golden rice. And she found that golden rice was as effective as pills and more effective than spinach. Now, it's really important that people understand that every green plant contains beta carotene, including rice. It's not as if we're adding something to rice that is not already in it. It's just that rice doesn't have any beta carotene in the grain, the white grain of rice. Unlike corn, for example, which is what makes corn yellow, is the beta carotene in the seed that we eat. And what they've done is they've taken the gene from corn that puts beta carotene into its own seed and applied that to rice. So
right. I guess there's also some kind of soil bacteria involved as well, right?
That's in order to have, you know, it was a very difficult thing to do in terms of the metabolic pathway of getting the endosperm of the rice, which is the seed, to put beta carotene into itself, because that pathway does not exist in normal rice. They searched the world for a variety of rice that, or relative of rice that could be bred into regular rice that would do this job, but they were not successful. They had support from the Rockefeller Foundation all through the 90s, and it took them 8 years in Europe to figure this out. And then the role Syngenta played is they came in with their top molecular biologists, and they improved the golden rice so that it had more beta carotene in it than the original one that was invented in 1999. And then Syngenta gave one of their top executives to the Golden Rice Project to negotiate the patent rights, which were not only held by Syngenta, but other companies, including Monsanto, and all of them gave their patent rights for free to the Humanitarian Golden Rice Project and to the International Rice Research Institute, which is now funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in the Philippines, Indonesia, and Bangladesh, where field trials of golden rice are taking place now.
Okay, good. Now let's go back to Dr. Tang's study, because we have this wonderful new organism. And you know, when you think about how miraculous our new technologies are, that we can breed things from one species into the genes of another species and make them do things that they would never think of doing in a natural world. And we can do that now. You know, we can grow corn that's resistant to herbicides, and we can grow corn that's infused with pesticides. And so that has changed in a huge way the way we go about doing business in agriculture. And now we're looking at the possibility of turning crops into essentially drugs. Because when you say that beta carotene in golden rice can cure blindness, that's a real drug claim. That's making a drug statement for which there must be clinical evidence. I think that's the way the Deshaies laws are written. If you or I were to grow golden rice and sell it out of our store as a cure for blindness, we would have to be able to prove that. So when we come back from...
It has been
okay, proven. That's what I'm going to go back to Dr. Tang's study here and pick that up when we get back from the break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking about the magic of golden rice. Is it the real thing or is it something else? We're talking with Dr. Patrick Moore. We're not talking with Greenpeace because Greenpeace is not talking with us. We will be right back. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. Well, according to the Deshaies laws, which are the laws governing food supplements and drugs, if you make a claim that a substance will cure a disease, you have to prove that that substance actually cured the disease. And so that's one of the curiosities we hold in store when we consider golden rice, because those who are proponents of golden rice say that it will cure blindness in the hungry of the world. It's an easy way for us to cure blindness. Well, is that so? Patrick Moore, you suggest that Dr. Tang has conducted a study that proves that golden rice will cure blindness? Is that
No, that is not true, Michael. It doesn't cure blindness. Blindness is irreversible. Once you're blind from vitamin A deficiency and your cornea is covered with a big white crust, you'll never see again, and nothing can cure that. We don't know how to do eye transplants at this point, but what it does is it prevents blindness from occurring due to lack of vitamin A, and it's got nothing to do with curing blindness. And also, it's important to note that vitamin A deficiency is not a disease. It is a nutritional deficiency.
Yeah.
And if golden rice was a cure, you know, if someone invented a golden rice that was a cure for a disease like Ebola or malaria or cancer, it would have been approved 10, 12 years ago. Absolutely no doubt about that, because it is clinically proven to deliver vitamin A to the human body, and it will therefore prevent blindness and prevent death from diseases that would otherwise not kill a healthy child. 250 million children are deficient in vitamin A. The bottom 2 million of the poorest of the poor, 70% of all the poor people in the world, depend on rice for their carbohydrate, for their energy. And the bottom 2 million of those who live in urban slums and remote rural villages with no roads to them and who eat the rice directly from their own fields, those are the ones who are dying. It's the poorest of the poor.
Right.
And if Greenpeace can just come out and say, we disagree with this because it's a Trojan horse, I'm getting in that horse. I'll tell you that, because I know who won the battle with the Trojan horse. The guys inside the horse.
The guys inside the horse won the battle. Well,
they did, and in that horse, and the scientists are getting in it with me. We've got huge support around the world for this campaign, and Greenpeace gets away with saying there may be
unfortunate. Well, that's the interesting thing about this struggle, is because who is against helping the poor?
Green peas.
Well, there you go. And the question is, why? And
because they don't give a damn about people. We started out with a campaign to end the threat of all-out nuclear war.
And it's not just Greenpeace, though, is it? I mean, there are a lot of nations in the world that are reluctant to have genetically modified crops planted in their soils.
Those are mostly European and African. The reason for the European is because they don't need it, because farming is a social program in Europe as opposed to the poor parts of the world. And Africa is afraid to adopt GM because the Greenpeace is campaigning against it, and they're threatening to not allow imports of food.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to come to grips with what Greenpeace's objections are, and we're trying to do it without them here to voice those objections. So we're just kind of working our way along here. Going back to the study,
that's just because they're gutless to come on the radio and argue the point because they don't have any point.
Well, let me see if I can pick up some of their points as I've been able to dig them out. And one of the thing goes back to the study, and I want to finish my notion or fishing around with respect to the study. You say that, well, we can't cure blindness. That's true. But we can prevent blindness. Is there a way of proving that we can prevent blindness? I mean, how does one go about proving that?
It's been proven and published in the Journal of Clinical Nutrition. That's what you said, clinical.
Clinical nutrition.
A clinical study sets out to prove whether or not the nutrient can be delivered to the person's system, mm-hmm. and to their blood, where it can be delivered to their organs and to their eyes. You see, when you eat food, if it has no beta carotene in it, then you have nothing to make vitamin A with. Beta carotene is the precursor,
right,
which we're capable of making vitamin A from beta carotene, but we can't make it without beta carotene. And then the beta carotene, the vitamin A, goes to your eye and allows you to have vision. If you don't have beta carotene in your blood, you can't deliver vitamin A to your eye, and therefore you will go blind, and also your whole immune system will be compromised.
So we need beta carotene. Beta carotene, you're telling us, is an essential nutrient. Without the essential nutrient, we're in deep trouble. They are not getting the essential nutrient in the poor places of the world because they're living on essentially just rice and not much else.
Yes.
And they're not getting any vegetables. They're not getting this and that. So the only way that they can get the beta carotene is if we re-engineer it into the white rice that they can grow in their fields. That would seem to be a pretty reasonable supposition. Let me ask you a follow-up on this. A lot of people are afraid that when you plant GMOs, like golden rice, that they'll kind of take over, as they have the canola crop in Canada. You know, it's finding a non-GMO canola plant in Canada is like the proverbial needle in a haystack now, because the genes have migrated from Monsanto's Roundup Ready canola to all the canola.
And that's a total myth, Michael. It's because all the farmers in Canada are smart enough to grow GM canola. Over 90% of all the canola grown in Canada is GM because that's what farmers want. The same for corn in the United States and cotton in India. Where farmers are allowed by law to grow GM, they choose to do it because there's been a meta-study just published. And, you know, this is not a campaign about GM that we're fighting. We're fighting a campaign for golden rice, which happens to be genetically modified. And our point is, there just might be one good genetically modified crop that can cure.
I think that's exactly you know, the point, Dr. Moore, that at least that's what I can, on the only thing I can figure out in looking at the objections to golden rice. I mean, what reason is there to object to it? Other than the fact that it's somehow a Trojan horse designed to bring GMOs into foreign lands that are unwilling to accept those GMOs. I can't think of any other.
But the lands that need golden rice is not Europe, which is, they're a bunch of Luddites on a lot of issues these days in Europe. But the lands that need golden rice are the tropical developing countries. Mexico needs it very badly. African countries, sub-Saharan African countries, South Asian countries, Indonesia, India. It's costing 1.4 million person years of life in India every year because people are dying young from vitamin A deficiency. It is the biggest killer of children in the world. And here is a rice plant that has nothing more different about it than containing an essential nutrient. That's why I say, in terms of clinical trials, when you make a new medicine, you're making something that's meant to kill something, an antibiotic.
Right.
You're making something that's meant to kill a malaria bug or a cancer virus or an Ebola virus. That's what you're trying to do, is kill something that's in you. And so side effects are a really big issue with medicine.
And we don't have any. I have to take a quick break. When we go back, we'll pick up that. Are there side effects from golden rice? Do stay tuned. Patrick Moore on the Food Chain with you, Michael Olson here. Do stay tuned. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We'll pick up a phone call when we get back. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain. We're talking golden rice. Is it really the salvation of the poor around the world, or is it a salvation for biotech companies trying to get the world to accept their genetically modified organisms? That's kind of the question we're working with. We've got to go phones right now, and we're going to pick up Sam. Sam, welcome to the Food Chain. You've got Dr. Patrick Moore on the line. Go ahead.
Hey there. A couple things I want to point out to the doctor. First of all, and then also to you, Michael, beta-carotene is not vitamin A. Beta-carotene has to be converted into vitamin A, and many people, in fact, most people, cannot make that conversion efficiently. That's point number one. So curing blindness with beta-carotene is a specious argument to begin with. Secondly, GMOs, the problem with GMOs, Michael, and for the doctor, while it may sound all well and good to the so-called cure blindness with the GMO-modified crop, is once you start tweaking the genes around, genes are networked with other genes. It's like a web of genetics. Once you change one gene, you have kind of a Pandora's box of effects. You don't really know what you're getting. You don't know what other genes are going to be turned on, what other genes are going to be turned off, and that's really the big problem with GMOs. When scientists come on the air and say things like, oh, we're going to cure blindness with GMO corn, it sounds all well and good, and you ask, well, what the heck could be wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that is you don't really know what the net effect of this genetic modification is, and that's really the big problem. Third of all, vitamin A is found for the eyes, is found in fish, and a lot of these countries that are eating lots of rice are also eating lots of fish. So to say that you're going to be curing blindness by changing, by modifying a crop to include beta-carotene doesn't seem like a really powerful argument to me. I'd like to hear the doctor's response to that.
Well, Dr. Moore?
Well, you caller, you're talking through your hat. Beta-carotene is the only precursor to vitamin A, and unless you
it's
get
a precursor,
beta-carotene...
doctor, that's not, it's a precursor. It's not vitamin A. That means it has to be converted into vitamin A, and this is a conversion that requires thyroid hormone and requires a healthy biochemistry, which many people do not have. It's very difficult to make that conversion for most people.
I don't know why Bill and Melinda Gates would be the major funders of this, seeing as though they actually know something about these issues, and that's what they're doing. They're saying
that's
that this
an
is
answer
the best
to my question,
possible
doctor.
Approach.
The listeners understand, beta-carotene is most certainly not vitamin A. It's a carotenoid, and it has to be converted into retinoic acid. And by the way, it's retinal in the eyes, which is a derivative of retinoic acid, vitamin A, that is responsible for vision. What beta-carotene does do is it protects the skin and it protects the eyes from ultraviolet radiation, but it is most certainly not vitamin A, Doc. You should look that up. It is a precursor and it has to be converted. And I'm going to hang up and listen. I'd like to hear the doctor's response.
Okay, good. Thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Holy smokes. How do you respond to that?
As I said, he's talking through his hat. He's making up stuff because when we eat beta-carotene, we can turn it into vitamin A. We have that metabolic pathway in our bodies, and that's how many people get their vitamin A. You can also get vitamin A by eating meat because the animals have taken beta-carotene from the plants and turned it into vitamin A. All animals are capable of turning beta-carotene into vitamin A because no plants have vitamin A in them, and that's how vitamin A gets produced in animals for eyesight. You may note that plants do not have eyes and therefore do not need vitamin A And it's vitamin A is converted into a number of other things in our bodies. But the main point is, as long as you eat green plants or seeds like corn that already have beta-carotene in them, yams, that's what makes them orange. Whenever you eat anything that is yellow or orange, you can be fairly sure that you're getting beta-carotene. The yellow and orange in the green part of the plant is disguised by the chlorophyll, which is green, and therefore you can't see the yellowness. But you may know there's lots of plants, like I'm looking out at my golden cryptomeria here in my garden, and the reason it's golden is because there's not as much chlorophyll in the tips of the leaves when they're young, and therefore you can see the beta-carotene, which makes it gold.
Well, okay, what about planting other things other than genetically modified rice? What about planting like squash or sweet potatoes or kale or carrots or spinach? What about planting all of those other things that are already containing a lot of beta-carotene?
Well, first, let's divide food into two separate categories. Energy foods, which are the carbohydrates, the wheat, the rice, the corn, the potatoes, etc., right? Those are necessary to get enough energy for your body every day. And then there are the foods that basically provide nutrition. Spinach, for example, if you just ate spinach, you would die because you don't get enough calories from a leafy vegetable or lettuce or whatever, even though it may well contain beta-carotene and other essential nutrients. So there are the nutrient foods and there are the carbohydrate foods. Unfortunately, rice is the least nutritious of all the carbohydrate foods, but it is eaten by 70% of the world's poor, partly because it is the cheapest one to produce and because of the climates in those various tropical countries where it grow. I mean, they grow corn in the Philippines now. Genetically modified corn has been approved for the Philippines, and it's really improved the lives of farmers there. A big meta study on GM crops around the world shows that it increases yield by over 20%, reduces pesticides by 35%, and increases small farmers' incomes by over 60%. But the profits of small farmers are increased by over 60%. So it's very successful. There's simply no doubt about that. The only reason it isn't being grown on more land is because of laws against it by governments who are afraid of Greenpeace and this whole...
If they're all afraid, all those governments are afraid of Greenpeace?
Yes, and the whole movement. Well, it's scary. The Greenpeace tries to make it as though there's something scary about GMOs.
Well, when we get back from this break, Dr. Moore, I'd like to ask you the question that a lot of people ask. Why are these big biotech companies and Bill and Melinda Gates and everybody giving away this seed to the world free? I mean, these companies make their living selling seeds, and here they are giving it away to the world free. It's kind of like McDonald's giving away hamburgers to the poor. Right back. What do you think out there? Is golden rice the hope of the hungry of the world, or is it a Trojan horse of industry? Let's try and see what Amy has to say. Amy, what do you think up there?
I think he needs to do a little more research. I mean, the guy that called before him, you told him he was talking through his hat. I think he needs to look at nutrition a little bit better. And you have your Trojan horses. Bill and Melinda Gates are Trojan horses of society. They don't even give their children the vaccine, you know, give their kids Monsanto and vaccination. Bill and Melinda Gates are not philanthropists, doctor. Thank you very much. Do your research.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call, Amy. Appreciate it.
And Michael, that's the kind of person we're dealing with here. And we're dealing with an organization in Greenpeace that has been basically hijacked by politicos and now projects the idea that humans are actually the enemies of the Earth. And that's why they don't care about poor people, because they believe there should be a lot less people on this planet.
Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Moore. It would seem like you have the best story on Earth. It would seem like, hey, folks, all we have to do to prevent blindness is to feed the hungry of the world this genetically engineered rice that before did not contain any carotene, now does contain carotene, precursor to vitamin A, which is required to protect the body from the environment. Okay, it is the most wonderful story on the face of the earth. But why aren't people believing? Why does not everybody believe it? Why do they think it's the Trojan horse? What is it in the story that has them believing that this is not good?
The opposition to genetic modification in general is a completely ridiculous situation. There's nothing there. It's like the ghost in the machine. There is nothing there that could be harmful to anyone. Most people don't realize that bacteria have been moving bits of genetic material from one species to another randomly.
So this really is a fear of genetically modified organisms and not a fear of rice that contains carotene.
Yes, but we are genetically modified organisms. They've taken this term genetically modified, which applies to all progeny of sexual reproduction. Anytime you cross a male with a female, you get a genetically modified offspring.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a re-engineered change. Re-engineered change is when you take genes from one species and graft it into the gene of an unrelated species.
The word engineering is much broader than that. What about radiation mutation and chemical mutation? Mm-hmm. Every pasta we eat is made from durum wheat that was produced by bombarding wheat seeds with high-level radiation.
Those are inducing mutations, right? Absolutely.
But with GMO, what you're doing is you're taking a specific gene that you know and moving it to another one. With radiation mutation, you're just scrambling the DNA and hoping something useful happens.
And we are scrambled out of time. It's been a lot of fun, Dr. Moore. I really love having you on the air and talking about chopping down trees to make sustainable forests. And that was Dr. Patrick Moore, and this has been The Food Chain, and thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain? Cheap food isn't.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.